Earlier this week, I was walking in front of my house when I saw a shadow, a triangular shadow, fly across or move its way across the road. And it was a shadow of the birds, the geese, flying south. And I looked up, and there they were in a V-shape, making their way to warmer places. The thought that came to my mind is, oh God, how great thou art. That these birds, who don't have names, who can't do anything other than what you see them doing, know which way is south. And know when to fly. And know even how to fly. And are able to, at certain points, when the first bird is tired, knows when to leave the back of the flock and move its way all the way to the front, to the head of the V, and be able to then cut the wind for the rest of the flock so they can move more smoothly and with less effort. And I say to myself, an explosion did not create that. But rather there is a God, a creator, who the scriptures tells us has created these birds, able to know how to fly and when to fly and even where to fly. A few years earlier, I was mowing my lawn, and this triangle flew over me. And when I looked up, it was not birds, but rather it was an airplane, a military airplane, a bomber, flying over my house. A beautiful sight, supersonic, incredible, as it zipped past over my yard and disappeared. And just seconds later, it came back. And I saw it before I heard it. And as it left into the horizon, I heard a boom. And then it came back. And I said, man created that. And man was able to create it because he was created in the image of God with intelligence, with the ability to create. We have been looking, by the way, an explosion did not create that airplane or the man who created the airplane. We have been looking at Genesis chapter 1, and if you would, please turn there once again. I want you to leave Genesis 1 this morning with this understanding that God is on your side. That God is on your side. In fact, God is eager for you. And it's displayed here in the very beginning of the Bible that God is truly concerned for you. God is eager for you. God knows you, and He wants you to know Him. He created this world designed for the good of mankind. The reason God looked at His creation and said it is good is because it was good for man to live in it. Until it was a place where man can live in it, God does not say it is good. You'll remember that on day two, when the earth was not inhabitable, God did not say it is good. But it's when God created the world so that it becomes more conducive for human life, He says, it is good. It is good. So last week, as we looked at days 1, 2, 3, and 4, we saw, first of all, on day 1, that God does give quite a bit of attention. It says, God saw, and we saw the vigilance of God's eye. On day 2, we witnessed that God has indeed a plan that He's carrying out. Day 3, we saw the importance of obedience as God separated the land from the water. And then we compared it or contrasted it to chapter 6, in which God, because of disobedience, filled the world back up with water. And then day 4, we saw the purposefulness of God, that He has a plan and a design. And now as we come to the last 2 days, 6 days in creation, and then God rested. We come to day 5, chapter 1, beginning at verse 20. And what I want you to see this morning are two overlapping truths. The first one is this: all life stems from God. And then on day 6, I want you to see the priority of mankind. The priority of mankind. Now, these things are important because in this day and age, both of these truths, are being challenged in the academic world, but also in the day-to-day practical lifestyle of our culture. All life stems from God and the priority of mankind. So let's begin there with day number 5, beginning of verse 20 through 23. Well, notice there that on day 5, God uses the word create. Now, it's been used twice before. Every time there's a new stage in the creation of God, we see that word come up, create. Stage 1, verse 1, God created the universe. He created the universe, he created this planet. Stage 2, verse 21, God created the sea and sky creatures. And then stage 3, verse 27, God created land creatures, including mankind. Create, create, create. Otherwise, we simply see God made. That word create is important. I want to point that out to you. It's used 3 times in chapter 1, another time in chapter 2. If you're interested, it would be verse 3, chapter 2, verse 3. The word there for create in the Hebrew, I don't expect you to remember this, but I think it's interesting, so I'll tell you. The word there is bara, bara. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. B-A-R-A for us. And it means simply to create. And then God, Barak. Some of you don't like that name, right? Then God, Barak. He blessed. First he created, bara, and then he blessed, Barak. Now, that word there, to create, means just that. It means to take and shape it, to form it. It means to cut out. It even means to make fat. And that's the word that is being used here. Now, it's an important word because whenever that word bara, create, is used, it means that God is the one creating. God is always the subject of bara. It is always referring to God created. And get this, it refers to God creating out of nothing. There was nothing there, and God created. You may be familiar with the term ex nihilo, out of nothing. God created. So it's important that we understand that when it says God created, it means God created, and that he created out of nothing. The psalmist writes in 104 and verse 30, when you send forth your spirit, they are created. Now, as we move on through this chapter, verse 22 is the first time we see God blessing this creation. And here we have that word, Barak. When we say that God blessed this creation, we're saying that God placed his approval on the living creatures. And he gave to them his favor. God placed his favor on those things that are alive. That word, bless, we see it 330 plus times in the Bible. And it refers to giving favor to those things that are alive, to living creatures, as creatures that will now bear life. They're alive and they will bear life. The word there, God blessed, is used to show that creation depends on God for its continued existence, for its reproduction, for its daily function. So you see there, what we so quickly just pass over is chock full of important truth for us to understand. When it says that God blessed, it is saying that God imparted life. And that God is the one who sustains life. God makes it possible for them to obey him when he says, be fruitful and multiply. Now, this word here, bless, adds a whole new dimension to how we, before we eat, we say, who wants to bless the food? It just doesn't make sense now, does it? Because to bless means to impart life. And really, you don't want that chicken to come alive. That roaster needs to stay dead. You see, words have meaning. And when we're talking about God or the things of God, we should be very careful how we express ourselves. So we don't want to bless the food. We want it to stay dead. We want God to bless us through the food. Right? God bless this home. Well, bless the people that live in the home. Bring life to those who are in this home. Well, by blessing again, God makes it possible for these creatures, including mankind, to succeed in living for him and obeying him. The blessing that God gives is given to living creatures as it relates to bearing new life. Now you'll notice here that God does not bless the vegetation. He does not bless the trees. Have you noticed that? I'm all for trees. I love trees. I'd rather not cut them down. They're beautiful. I don't like really cleaning up after them at this time of year. But in a sense, I enjoy it even. It's a beautiful time of year. But look, God did not bless the trees. Why? Because trees are not conscious of life. They're not conscious of their environment. They do not produce life. What they do is they drop their seed. And the plants grow. Even despite the tree, the plants grow. But animals produce life. They reproduce. And so in verse 22, God said to them, be fruitful, multiply, fill the waters, fill the sky. And now God makes it possible for them to do that. He blesses them. In verse 28, mankind is told, look, be fruitful, multiply, you see it there? Fill the earth, subdue the earth, and have dominion over the land. God's blessing, his favor, makes that possible. Again, remember the theme in the book of Genesis? And it carries throughout all of biblical history, right into our history. God gives land, and then he blesses his people as he gives them the land. Here it all started. God created the land, and now he's going to bless the people by giving them the land. Namely, here, Adam and Eve. Life stems from God. He is the one that gives life and, of course, sustains life. Life stems from God. Life is not by chance. Life does not happen randomly. Life is not simply the compilation of atoms and the proper environment and boom, suddenly things that did not exist are now existing. Let me quote to you from an evolutionist by the name of Michael Denton. He wrote a book entitled Evolution, A Theory in Crisis. Nonetheless, he was an adherent to the Darwinian theory. He said, look, it was because Darwinian theory broke man's link with God and sent him adrift in a cosmos without purpose or end that its impact was so fundamental. His point is clear. Evolution separates us from the fact that all life begins with God. It separates us from God. I want you to make a contrast here as we do some Bible study in Genesis 1. Look at verse 11. Look at what verse 11 says. Verse 11 in chapter 1 says, and God said, let the land produce vegetation. And now look at verse 12. Look at what happened. The land produced vegetation. Makes sense, right? God said it, it happened. Let the land produce vegetation. And so we see that the land, not God, produced the vegetation. Now, we all know that being that he is God, indirectly, God is the cause of all this. But the immediate, the direct cause is actually the land itself. So that we see here that the land has authority to bring forth vegetation. Now, contrast this with verse 20. Look at verse 20. God said, let the waters and the skies swarm with sea creatures and birds. And look at verse 21. And the Lord created the great sea creatures and the birds. You see the difference? And the vegetation, the land produced the vegetation. But look, when we're talking about living creatures, it says God is the one who created the living creatures directly and immediately. Vegetation was produced by the land, but life was produced by God. So we see here that there's a distinction in the origin of vegetation and the origin of living creatures. All life stems from the hand of God. There's a distinction in the origin of vegetation and those creatures that breathe air, that are living. All life stems directly from our God. And because of that, all life is to be distinguished from the rest of the world. It is blessed by God to produce life. We must respect life. Listen, if a baby in a womb, if a fetus in a womb is alive, then it should be allowed to live. It's that simple. Life stems from God. Even when it's inconvenient. Even if she has no idea how she's going to pay for this. Even if it was because of a crime. All life stems from God. Then we have the final day of creation, day number six. And on day number six, we see the priority of mankind. The priority of mankind. Now, this is so important. In a world in which we are just now another part of creation, I want you to see that we, God created us to be the apple of his eye, the peak of his creation. Yes, even you. The priority of mankind. But before we jump into this, let me just point out to you verse 24. Look at what it says there. And God said, now we've seen this phrase several times now, right? And God said, let me just point this out to you. God speaks and he creates. God calls out and it's done. He didn't have to take a tweezer. He didn't have to take a chisel. God spoke and it existed. God creates with his words. God calls into your soul and he draws you to himself. Just like he did Lazarus, dead Lazarus. Lazarus, come up. And Lazarus is given new life. God speaks and life is created. Even spiritual life. When God calls you, don't fight it. Come to him. Come to him. Well, verse 24. God created here the living land creatures. Notice there, verse 24 says, let the earth bring forth creatures. And then look at verse 25. And God made the beasts of the earth. Notice again, the earth did not produce the beasts of the earth, but rather it is the hand of God. Life begins with God and should not be confused with the rest of the physical world. Now, this portion of the text gives to us a twofold creation. God is creating two things here. I just pointed it out to you. Let me be a little more detailed. Look at verse 24. In verse 24, we see here that God created the land creatures, and then it's detailed for us. We have here the livestock, and then the creatures that crawl or creep, and you know, spiders, and well, I'll leave that to your imagination as to what those creeping things are. And then he created the wild animals. The wild animals. Literally there, it reads the vigorous life. The wild animals. But what I found interesting this week as I was studying that word, that phrase, wild animals can also be translated relatives. So, could it be that God was talking about my family there? Those wild animals. No, I know it wasn't talking about my family, because then it says that God saw it and it was good. So that couldn't be my family. I hope my brother's not listening. No, the living creatures, livestock, creatures, and wild animals. And then he created, verse 26, mankind. Notice two things there about the creation of mankind. First of all, he is created in the imago Dei. That's the Latin phrase for the image of God. He was created in the image of God. And he was created male and female, verse 27. We'll get back to that in a few moments, but let me point out yet another truth for you here that you see right there with your own eyes, beginning verse 21, says that the animals are created according to their own kind, according to their own kinds. We see it several times. Sea creatures, and every moving sea creature created how? According to their own kinds. The winged birds created according to their own kinds. The beasts of the earth, how? According to their own kinds. Livestock, according to their own kinds. Everything that creeps, according to their own kinds. I think you get the idea here, right? What does the phrase mean? Well, the phrase is telling us that all these things were created according to groupings, where genetic interchange is possible. Particular groupings. For example, a horse and a donkey are of the same genetic grouping according to their own kind. Therefore, they can naturally reproduce life. And when you bring a horse together with a donkey, you get a mule. Why? Because they share the same form or biological structure. They're placed in a particular grouping according to their own kind. And that's why you will never see an alligator horse, because an alligator and a horse are not of the same kind. It's that simple. And you see, this is a scientific book here at this stage. Genesis 1 speaks to us in terms of science. The result is this. This is what we will see in nature. We will see in nature microevolution. Microevolution, where there are changes within the same structure of animals. Changes that happen within a group. And these changes are observable. And they are horizontal changes. They can happen naturally, or they can happen artificially. For example, dog breeders cause microevolution. And this is all due to genetic mutations within a particular species. However, what we do not see in this text, and what we do not see in real life, is macroevolution, which is the Darwinian explanation for the origin of species. Macroevolution is where they claim there are major changes from one species into another. These are vertical ascending changes, escalating changes, genetic mutations across species, across biological structures. For example, the supposed macroevolution of the primate into a human. Well, we have no evidence for that. Dr. John D. Morris writes, he says, the scientific observations, get this, the scientific observations support the creation tenet that each basic type is separate and distinct from all others, and that while variation is inevitable, macroevolution does not and did not happen. Oh, I know it's debatable, but I also know what the scriptures teach. And there I land. In the words of Martin Luther, I can do no other. According to their own kind, denounces Darwinian evolution. Now, maybe some of you have read or heard about the Homo naledi man. Have you? How many of you have heard of the new finding? Not too many of you. Well, just so you know, thousands of human or thousands of bones have been found at a huge gravesite in South Africa. So far, they have excavated thousands of bones, but they expect that there's thousands and thousands more still waiting to be unburied. And what some scientists are claiming is that that this is a previous stage of the Homo sapien. This is a previous stage of what would eventually become human beings. But whereas the discovery is about a year and a half old, it just recently came out in the news. And so just now people are beginning to examine those bones outside of those who discover them. Let me just say this, the verdict is still out, and it appears simply to be the human bones of a group of people with unique anatomical variations. The sort of thing that we would see in people groups. For example, if you were to find the gravesite of pygmies, it would be far different than the gravesite of Swedes, for example. And it appears to be nothing more than just that. They're still having to do more tests, including carbon dating, but they are reluctant to do the carbon dating because they're afraid that the carbon dating will not take it back the millions of years they are hoping it will. Well, having said that, I want you to see here the creation of man. This is important, the creation of man. Notice there, verse 26, we see the Trinitarian matter of God. He says, let us create man in our image. There again, we see the hint, and nothing more than that, the hint of the Trinity. All right? It's a beginning disclosure of the complexity of God. Three persons, one God. The diversity and yet the unity of our God. Well, as we move on from verse 26, you see that man is created in the image of God. Here, for the first time, it does not say according to its own kind. It's not that man was not created according to its own kind. It's that there's something more important. Man is unlike any other part of creation. Instead of being noted as being created according to his own kind, he is noted here as being created according to the divine. Divine. He's created in the image of God, according to God's kind. Man is made not only in the likeness of his own kind, but more importantly, man is made in the likeness of his creator. So here we see, for the first time, male and female are stressed. You'll notice that nowhere else did God mention male or female, although we know that was part of creation. And the image of God is seen in this diversity, male and female, as well as in the unity of this diversity. We see the image of God. Between a man and a woman, we see the diversity as well as the unity. By the way, beginning with this text, we know that any other arrangement defiles the image of God in man. Now, I know our culture says otherwise. In fact, the law of the land now says otherwise, doesn't it? But what God said is that any other arrangement will defile the image of God in man. Keep in mind that God created us in order that we would reflect him, in order that we would know him and enjoy him forever. Certainly, it does not make any sense for us to try to defile the image of God in us. And because we are created in the image of God, look at verse 28. Man is to have, look, dominion over the earth. That's the ability to govern. He is to subdue the earth, that is control. And he is to fill the earth and have access to all the vegetation of the earth. Now, look, this is important too. It seems like everything's important, right? But it is. Look, he is to have access to the vegetation. All the vegetation that the earth produces. This vegetation is going to sustain the life of man. But notice here, it is not talking that man is supposed to sustain Mother Earth. No, it's earth is supposed to sustain man. Even while man works to maintain the earth, if you jump over to chapter 2 and verse 15. It's not that man abandons the earth, but please keep in mind, the earth was designed for man, and not man for the planet. Mankind is that special creation of God. God said that creation was good when it became inhabitable for mankind. And so mankind is completely separated from all of creation, from all other creatures. He is like God or the Imago Dei, the image of God. He is not God-like. He is not divine. Rather, he bears on him the imprint of God, the image of God. In fact, we get a good understanding of what the image of God is if we read the text. You'll notice there, I already referred to it. Look at the characteristics that makes man in the image of God. He is to rule, he is to have dominion, that is God-like, right? He is to conquer or subdue. He is to create or cultivate. He is to sustain. This is the image of God in man. Now, you could probably, and I hope you do, add to that list. And some of us will have a very long list as to how we are created in the image of God. And some of us will have a rather short list, whatever it may be. I hope it's right. But whatever length your list may be, look, here's the real issue. We have taken the image of God that no other part of creation bears. And what do we do with it? Instead of reflecting God and glorifying God with it, what do? We use it against God. We use it against Him. What do I mean? What I mean is this. The abilities that no other creature has, man uses, instead of to glorify God, man uses to liberate himself from God. We try to pull ourselves away from God and become independent of God. The very qualities that are supposed to reflect God to the rest of the world and to each other, to bring glory to God, what do? We have used it to emancipate ourselves from the bondage of the divine. And what do? Whenever we move away from God, because we are intellectual, we can think, and we can reason, we can create, we can subdue. But whenever we take those traits and we move away from God, look, we are violating the very design and purpose that God has made. We work against ourselves. And yet, we believe that without God, we can be happier. It just doesn't make sense. That's the equivalent of trying to hang up a family portrait with a sledgehammer. That's like trying to tune up your car with a butter knife. It's just against design. It's not going to work. A funny thing I heard this week. We are so impressed with ourselves. We are so impressed with the image of God in us. And instead of giving God glory, we give ourselves glory. Look at what I heard this week. There have been, in the past couple years, more deaths due to taking selfies than shark attacks. Imagine that. More people dying while they're taking selfies than people dying swimming in the oceans and being attacked by sharks. And it just doesn't make sense, does it? But that's what the stats tell us. We are really impressed with ourselves. Oh, that we would be impressed with God. Well, in closing, let me just say this. A little shift here, but nonetheless very important. Just as we are to respect God and honor Him with our words and with our lives, just as we ought to know Him, live for Him, and enjoy Him forever, look, because of the image of God in us, never are we to curse those who are made in the likeness of God. Don't curse those who are made in the likeness of God. The entire rule for how we deal with each other is grounded in this Imago Dei, is grounded in the image of God. If you look at Ephesians, it says what? Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church. Why? Because she bears the image of God. Fathers, discipline your children. Care for them. Instruct your children. Why? Because they are made in the image of God. Do for them just as the Lord does for His children. The comforting love of a mother is the image of God comforting her, of the loving God comforting women. So mothers, comfort your children, even as God comforts His children. Nurture your children, even as God nurtures His children. earthly masters, bosses, how you deal with your people who work under you should reflect the justice and the fairness that is found in our heavenly master. Why? Because they bear the image of God. And though sin has greatly marred God's image in us, by God's grace, when you come to Christ and you know Him as your Lord and Savior, when you have that intimate relationship with Jesus Christ, the Messiah Himself, then what you discover is that the Holy Spirit is working in you and molding you and re-sculpting the image of God in you so that you will better reflect the God who you are to imitate. As you place yourself under His authority, you will be just amazed to see how now you are fulfilling your design, your purpose of knowing God, reflecting God, and enjoying Him forever. And until you place yourself under His rule, my friends, you are going to be cheating yourself and cheating God. Living by that grace of coming to God at His terms, then people will see your good works. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to say, wow, that person really changed. She's not who she used to be. And they're going to give God the glory. And that's what the image of God in you is all about. That God would be glorified through you. That you would reflect Him. One day, this restoration of the image of God in us is going to be made complete. And on that day, we will live forever and ever in the presence of God. We are going to be clothed with His glory. The very end of the Bible tells us so. Chapters 21, 22. And then, we will have truly become the kind of people that are according to God's kind. Look forward to that day. But the process begins now. Strive for it. Live for it. Know it. The supremacy of man in creation. We are made in the image of God. And all life stems from God. Don't forget it, my friends. Don't listen to what this world is saying. Don't get caught up in that. Defend what you know is true and live by it.